Hello, everybody. My name is Alla Muller, and you're listening to the Serial Killers of the Soviet Union podcast. I'm really glad that you're here today. And I know, I haven't been around for about a month, but it was a really busy month, and I was feeling a little anxious and just not really good, you know. So I just wanted to take a little break from everything. I hope that you still want to listen to this podcast. It is really important to me, and thank you so much for all of your support. We recently hit 300 listenings, and I'm so happy and incredibly proud of myself. So thank you all so much. It would be nothing without y'all. Okay, so today's episode is going to have yours discretion, because we're going to talk about children again, unfortunately. And today our maniac of the episode, I guess, is Vladimir Vinichevsky. So let's just go ahead. The childhood of Vladimir Vinichevsky, who was born on June 8, 1923, in Sverdlovsk, cannot be called happy. His family was wealthy. His father, a former security officer, worked in the printing house Uralsky Rabochi. His mother worked as a cashier. Vladimir suffered from a genetic disease, which is why he stuttered and had a slightly asymmetrical face. According to another version, the boy began to stutter from the fight after falling into a deep hole. How the first maniac of the USSR killed dozens of people and kept Moscow at bay, be that as it may, because of these defects, Vinichevsky was complex and could not find a common language with his peers. He grew up very shy and was often attacked by the yard children and classmates. They pushed and kicked the boy, knowing that he would not be able to fight back. Vinichevsky's parents saw this and repeatedly tried to treat their son for stuttering, but to no avail. I watched that he was lethargic, uncommunicative. This is how he was from early childhood. His health was poor. Three times he suffered from pneumonia, whooping cough, measles. Once there was a throat operation, appendix removal. He had a desire to travel, and he wanted to travel without his parents. He is very secretive, silent. He never talked about anything. He is fearless. He was not afraid of anything, said Vladimir's mother. Unable to improve their son's health, his parents began to indulge all his whims. They bought him good clothes and shoes, presented him with a bicycle and a piano. The teenager could boast of a tank helmet and a pen knife, which were fashionable at that time, and also constant pocket money. Uncle Vinichevsky recalled that once in the piggy bank of his nephew, he counted as much as 600 rubles. At that time, 2 monthly salaries of a worker. Failed robber. The Vinichevsky family lived in a barrack on Pervomaiskaya Street. Until the first grade, Vladimir was good and showed himself as a very smart boy. But then he passed in his studies and even stayed for a second year. He explained this by constant headaches, weakened memory, and transferred to another school. True, the reason for the latter was an unpleasant story in which Vinichevsky turned out to be one of the main characters. He stole money, a revolver, gunpowder, and a shot from his father. And then, together with 2 classmates, planned to leave for the Caucasus. And before the trip, Vinichevsky, along with his comrades, was going to rob a military warehouse. Fortunately, the father noticed the missing weapon in time and at first called it his son, but then he decided that the teenager had succumbed to the bad influence of his peers, and Vladimir was transferred to another school. However, there were rumors that Vinichevsky was simply kicked out of the previous school. He allegedly drank wine in the company of the same failed fugitives, and since the incident took place right in the middle of the school year, Vladimir was taken to another school only next fall. For 6 months, he did not study anywhere, and in September, he went back to the 5th grade. True, in this school, Vinichevsky did not work out with his classmates, so he again had to change his place of study. Cold without passions. In the end, the teenager completely lost interest in studying, and he began to rush to work, from which the whole family was amicably dissuading him. Then he again decided to run away and got to Tagil. It's the name of the city. But there he was detained and handed over to his mother, who had arrived there. Vladimir reluctantly returned to his studies, and this time managed to find a friend for himself, Ernest Neizvestny, who later became a famous sculptor. The boys went to the school, cinema, theater together, and visited each other. Young Vinichevsky did not particularly like reading and was cool with books, but the teenager liked patriotic films, especially on military topics. And also, despite his dislike of learning, Vladimir took private piano lessons. When Vinichevsky's time for adolescence came, he, unlike his peers, did not become actively interested in the opposite sex. On the contrary, the teenager was surprised to realize that girls not only did not interest him at all, but also caused a feeling of disgust. His friends, unknown, noticed this and tried to start a conversation with Vladimir about the opposite sex, but Vinichevsky did not support this topic, but only frowned and said that he does not like sexual intercourse and never had. Parenting mistakes. It is possible that several circumstances influenced the psyche of young Vinichevsky in terms of communication with girls. Firstly, his father strictly punished him not to enter into relations with the opposite sex. They say the venereal diseases go around Sverdlovsk. Secondly, in 1937, Vladimir's uncle gave his nephew a sex education lesson and, among other things, advised not to rape the girls. Otherwise, they might be tracked down or the victim would identify. Oh my god, that is so weird to say that. The story from the fifth grade did not benefit Vinichevsky either. The schoolboy's mother found love letters that he wrote to the girls. She considered her son's interest in the opposite sex premature and rudely scolded him. However, Elizaveta Vinichevska was always distinguished by a peculiar behavior and rather strange actions. So one day, she sent her son to the pharmacy, handing him an empty bottle of her father's medicine. He suffered from erectile dysfunction. Ooh. At the same time, Vinichevsky perfectly understood what he was buying and why. Moreover, his parents slept with him in the same room, although later, Elizaveta would argue that she and her husband had never had any intimacy with their son. But Vinichevsky often witnessed outbursts of jealousy from his own father, who sometimes attacked the teenager himself, threatening to send him to a boarding school for poor studies. Dangerous interest. Meanwhile, at some point, young Vinichevsky had unhealthy feelings for children. He played with them in the sandboxes, at first helping to sculpt Easter cakes, and over time, he began to secretly strangle the kids. The frightened children complained to their parents, but they thought that the teenager was just playing and did not pay attention to their words. Ernst Neizvestny also noticed oddities in his friend's behavior. His 5-year-old sister was growing up, whom he somehow left alone with Vladimir for a short time. And when he reappeared in the room, he noticed that his friend's body was shaking with a large shiver. An unknown person asked a classmate what was the matter, but his friend could not explain anything plainly. Children 3 and 5 years old lived in the next room with Vinichevsky, but he never offended them, fearing for his reputation in the eyes of the residents of the barracks. Even having begun to commit terrible murders, the maniac did not touch the children from the room behind the wall. However, Vinichevsky still committed the first of his crimes not far from his home, in a nearby house. First blood. The first crime that became known to the police was committed by Vladimir Vinichevsky in the summer of 1938, when he was only 15 years old. The victim of the maniac was the 3-year-old Gerta Gribanova. The girl did not live to see her 4th birthday for only a month. On the fateful day, Gerda was looked after by her grandfather, but he paid much more attention to her older sister, Irada. She was living after a difficult tooth extraction and her temperature rose. Gerda, for the most part, was left to herself and played in the courtyard for a house on Pirvomayskaya Street. This was used by the maniac Vinichevsky. He went into the yard and invited the girl to go to the garden. Gerda knew Vladimir and trustingly held out her hand to him. Already in the garden, the maniac began to choke his victim, and when she stopped breathing, several times he thrust a knife into her head with such force that part of the blade got stuck in the skull. After that, Vinchevsky outraged the body, partially dismembered it, hid the remains under a birch cherry bush, and fled. Soon the grandfather miscarried. He tried to find the granddaughter himself, but to no avail. After midnight, her parents, who returned from the theater, began to look for the girl, but the police were in no hurry to start their search. The law enforcement officers tried to convince Gerda's relative that she would find herself, but in the end, the child's body was discovered by thieves, who the next morning climbed into the garden near the Gribanovs' house in the search of something edible. 12-year-old Vasya Malchanov saw Gerda's body under the birch cherry, covered with burdocks and outerwear, and immediately raised a noise to which the adults came running. Only then did policemen appear on Pirvomayskaya Street, who immediately opened a criminal case and promised to find the killer as soon as possible. They did not know the maniac was very close. Vinchevsky stood in the crowd of onlookers and watched as Gerda's body was carried out of the garden. No one even thought of him that day, and the suspects included the parents and grandfather of the deceased, as well as Vasya Malchanov and his friends. True, soon all suspicions were removed from them, but while the investigators were trying to get confessions from the detainees, the maniac Vinichevsky went hunting again. Armed with a legend. The cautious Vinichevsky invented a legend for himself in case any of the adults stopped him. In those years, teenagers actively earned pocket money, collecting from the population and handing over to the state scrap metal, and the maniac decided, if necessary, to impersonate one of these juveling collectors. In August 1938, Vinichevsky entered the courtyard of the house on Henri Marty Street, where the Pleshchief family lived. And in the courtyard, the maniac noticed 4-year-old Nina. The girl was not afraid of the stranger and agreed to show him where the toilet is. When they were at the barn with horse stalls, Vinchevsky dragged Nina inside, raped, and then, as it seemed to him, strangled. After that, he put the victim in a wooden box and buried her in the hay. However, the maniac miscalculated. Nina survived, woke up, and began to moan. The mother found her and saw signs of suffocation in the girl's neck, after which she called a doctor. But the doctor did not even examine the little patient and immediately suggested that Nina was bitten by a cow. The fact that Prishevs did not keep such animals did not bother the doctor at all. After such a medical examination, the family decided not to file a complaint with the police, judging that they would not achieve anything there either. What actually happened to Nina will become known only after the capture of Vladimir Vinichevsky. Snow grave. In February 1939, the entire Sverdlovsk shuddered at the news of the maniac's new crime. Walking in the evening along Lunacharsky Street, Vinichevsky suddenly noticed that near one of the houses there was a sled with a little boy, 2-year-old Boris Titov, whom his mother had left for a short time under the supervision of her oldest son, 5-year-old Nathan. But the sentinel played with the snow and did not notice how Vinichevsky crept up to the sled and rushed to run with them. But his disappearance was noticed by the returning mother. She ran down the street, loudly shouting the name of her son. At some point, 20-30 meters from her, she noticed a stranger dragging a children's sled behind him. But before the woman caught up with him, Vinichevsky grabbed the child and ran away. The police immediately joined in the search for the boy, who were summoned by the eyewitnesses. It was the attentiveness of one of the guards that saved Boris Titov's life. While walking around the neighborhood in search of the boy, the policeman heard a faint groan that came from a deep snowdrift. The guardian of the order saw footprints, saying one thing: something was buried in the snow. Then the policeman began to dig in a snowdrift and found their boy whom the maniac had buried, hoping that the victim would suffocate. Fortunately, the child got up with fright and few bruises. But since the boy survived, the police did not start a criminal case because of this incident. The militiamen were not alarmed by the fact that the place of death of Gerda Gribanova and the place of abduction of Boris Titov were separated by only 200 meters. miracle on the operating table. Despite the puncture, the maniac Vinchevsky did not even think to stop his crimes. On May 1, 1939, he attacked 4-year-old Raya Rakhmutolina, who was waiting for her mother near her house in Shevchenko Street. He lured the girl to the toilet, and then he began to stab her in the face and then run away, leaving his victim to bleed. Raya, in a semi-faint state, went to the house, and on the way she was noticed by a neighbor, who immediately called the doctors. The girl's condition shocked even the doctors, who had seen a lot. It was as if they had a radar over the girl's face. The interrogation of the victim almost confused the investigation. Raya got confused in her story, saying that she was attacked either by her uncle or her aunt. But then the girl's mother helped to explain that she knew the Bashkir language well and Russian poorly, because of which she could simply confuse the words. In that case of the attack on Paradise, two suspects were detained, but their guilt could not be proved. A month and a half later, on June 12, 1939, a young resident of the Pionersky village, Alia Gubina, who was 2.5 years old, suddenly disappeared. Her family lived in a house on Flotskaya Street. Vinchevsky kidnapped the girl thanks to the fact that her father and stepmom had a feast with friends. The maniac brought his victim to the deserted Osnovinsky Park and attacked her with a knife. The girl was found an hour later. Passers-by noticed that the child was sitting by the tree and came closer. What they saw shocked them. Ellie's stomach resembled a gaping wound while the girl was conscious. The child was hospitalized, but the doctors did not particularly hope that Ada would survive. However, a miracle happened. She came to the young and talented surgeon Zinaida Niganova, who performed a flawless operation, saved Ellie's life, and prevented the development of sepsis. Soon the little patient began to recover. Curse Beth. The next victim of the maniac Vinchevsky was Rita Kanchina, who in 2 months was supposed to be 4 years old. Her family lived in the village of Krasnaya Zvezda, and the girl's mother kept her daughter with her at all times. But one day, Rita slipped away from her girls from home and ran into Vinchevsky in her misfortune. He took the girl into the forest, strangled, stabbed her with a knife, and abused the corpse. The maniac filled up the body of the victim with branches and covered her head with a boulder. Rita's remains were found 4 days later by 2 neighbors of the Hanjin family who were driving a herd of goats through the forest. But the search for the murderer by the police remained fruitless at all times. Fruitless, despite the fact that he left a trace of his boot on the body of one of the victims, a potential lead for the investigation. And the bloody harvest of Vinichevsky meanwhile continued. 3-year-old Valya Kamaeva, 4-year-old Lida Surnina, 2-year-old Kolya, 3-year-old Kolya Petrov, 4-year-old Tasya Morozova, and all of them became victims of the Ural Monster. It was the nickname given to the killer. But it is possible that there were much more victims at the hands of the maniac. After all, not all parents reported to the authorities about incidents with their children. At the same time, Vinichevsky operated not only in his native Sverdlovsk and its environs, but also in other cities. In Nizhny Tagil, Rita Fomina became a victim of a maniac. She was 2.5 years old, and in Kushva, where the Ural Monster once was treated for stuttering, he dealt with 3-year-old Valya Lobanova. Fear and loathing in Sverdlovsk. All Sverdlovsk was plunged into a real horror, frightened monsters. Mothers tried not to let their children go away from them. And the military men and cadets of military schools were ordered to organize patrols and closely observe all adults in whose company the children are. Such vigilance ultimately saved the life of little Slava Volkov, the last child kidnapped by Vinichevsky. On the evening of October 24, 1939, the parents gathered the 3-year-old boy for a walk, and he, together with his older sister Rita, was the first to go outside. The children were waiting for dolls at their house on Kulturny Street, but at some point the girl suddenly returned home. She told her parents that a young man approached her and said that her mother has asked her to come up to her. Rita left her brother in the company of a stranger and ran to the apartment. Realizing what had happened, the whole family rushed into the yard, but Slava was nowhere to be found. At this time, the royal monster, along with its victims, was already on the tram. They reached a deserted spot, and the maniac took the boy by the hand towards the forest. Varita Kanjina was killed. But then a cadet of the Sverdlov School of Workers and Peasants, in quotes, Ivan Popov noticed a strange pair, and trusting his intuition, followed. Soon he was accompanied by two classmates whom Popov met along the way. The trio watched the suspect very carefully, fearing to frighten him off. The cadets kept a great distance from him, and Vinichevsky, not even suspecting about the tale, took the victims in his arms, carried it deep into the forest, took off the boy's outwear, and began to strangle him. It was impossible to hesitate. The cadets, with revolvers at the ready, pounced the maniac and twisted him. It was rumored that during the arrest, the royal monster sobbed louder than its victim. He was so afraid for his life. Bitter truth. During the search of the detainees, investigators, among other things, found wrappers from expensive chocolates. Vinichevsky himself did not like them, but with the help of sweets, he lured his little victims. The search came as a shock to the parents of the royal monster. Not knowing about the detention of their son, they at first decided that he was missing. Vinichevsky's father even managed to bring a statement about the missing teenager to the police. When law enforcement officers knocked on the door to the maniac parents, the shocking truth was completely revealed to them. Hi everybody, you're listening to the Serial Killers of the Soviet Union podcast, and I'm Ala Muna. So, due to the technical issues, I had to make two parts of the story, and we still keep on talking about Vladimir Vinichevsky, and unfortunately, I wasn't able to put the last part of the story in the first episode, so I'm really sorry. So let's just continue, I guess. Later, they renounced Vinichevsky. However, the mother did it rather under the pressure of her husband, and she herself went to the end and knocked the official's doorsteps, asking for pardon for her son. Sorting through his papers, Yelizaveta Vinichevska found strange notes with a cipher and was convinced that her son was acting under the influence and on the tip of some clever accomplice. The woman even tried to find him on her own, but eventually gave up these attempts. During interrogation, Yelizaveta said that her son dreamt of traveling a lot, was secretive and unsociable, but at the same time showed fearlessness. She said that at the age of 3, he, along with another boy, tried to bury a dog alive, but later he did not make similar attempts. On the contrary, Vinichevsky looked after the purchased rabbits and asked to buy him a pig. 10 years in the camps is not enough for him. Meanwhile, the father of the Ulan monster, according to some sources, personally demanded execution for his son. Initially, Vinichevsky's actions were qualified under the clause of E of Article 136, premeditated murder using the helpless position of the killed, of the RSFSR criminal code. However, later, this qualification in the criminal case of a maniac was neatly replaced by Article 59/3, banditry. This was not a mistake. Vinichevsky was deliberately brought under a death sentence because, according to the initial qualifications, the maximum that a murderer could get was 10 years in the camps. Absolutely all detectives familiar with this case categorically opposed the prospect of even a hypothetical release of one of the most terrible maniacs in the USSR. Writer Alexei Rakitin, in his book The Royal Monster, described the thoughts of the police officer. This fellow must be brought under the tower, shot without talking. 10 years in the camps is not enough for him. True, Vinichevsky himself did not even suspect the intentions of the law enforcement officers and calmly prepared for a long prison term. In solitary confinement, he wrote poetry and sang obscene songs of his own composition. The maniac began to cooperate with the investigation and even talked about those crimes about which the detectives did not suspect. And in investigative experiments, Vinichevsky showed without much emotion how he killed and raped his victims. It was nice when I choked in torment. At the trial, the Royal Monster was accused of attacks of 18 children in 1938-1939. He killed 8 and attempted to kill 10. The trial of Vincheschi began on January 15, 1940. I was pleased when I strangled when a child was tormented, the maniac said bluntly. In his monologues at the trial, there was neither pity for the tortured victims, not regret for what he had done. The defendant's verdict was delivered in record time. It was announced the very next day after the start of the trial itself. Should Vincheschi Vladimir Grigorievich, the material evidence in the case, Vincheschi's shirt, trousers, and boots, should be returned to Vincheschi's parents, the pen knife should be sent to the original police department, the candy wrapper should be destroyed, and the rest of the evidence should be left with the case. Relatives recall that once the supposedly brave Vincheschi, when asked if he was afraid to return home late at night, calmly replied, "Anyway, one day you will have to die." But immediately after the verdict, the maniac's former bravado disappeared. He began to write complaints in which he presented himself as a child entangled in life, asked to pardon, and promised to take the true path. At the same time, the convict tried to pretend to be insane, but his trick was quickly seen by the expert from the Serbian Institute. As a result, Vincheschi, with the help of the bureaucracy, managed to live less than 12 months. He was shot on November 11, 1940. It is not known where the Royal Monster is buried, but most likely its remains rest on the 12th kilometer of the Moscow Highway. It was in this place of the Sverdlovsk region that those executed were buried in a common grave, including those on political charges. In memory of the victims of oppressions buried there in 2017, a memorial, Masks of Sorrows, Europe, Asia, appeared on the Moscow Highway. It was created by the sculptor Ernst Neizvestny, a school friend of one of the most terrible maniacs in the Soviet Union. So honestly, all of that sounds like some type of a Netflix original to me, or like Netflix documentary stuff, you know. And I would never believe that this actually happened, but it did. And the way it all played out, like his ex-best friend actually made a memorial for his grave. And to me, this is really traumatizing, honestly, to read about all of this, find all of this, and tell you all of this. But I just think that maybe my stories are not trying to influence anybody, like, in a way, I'll do the same thing, but more of actually telling people that stuff like that happened, and you need to be careful. Here's what you can look for, and just don't do bad stuff. So anyway, thank you all for listening to me today. Please, if you listen to this one first, don't check out the first part. Yeah, I'm saying this a little bit too late. But just in case, if you kept on going with this, thank you all again. I really love you. And let's see each other soon. Bye.